What kind of agreements or equity should you be giving away to your earliest employees, earliest advisors and mentors, and maybe even your earliest investors? Welcome back to another episode of the Launch Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Kerr, founder of LaunchPeer. And today we're going to be talking about something that is really important to do, but most of the time, founders, when they ask this question, it's usually too late. So hopefully you're listening to this episode and you haven't started working with anyone with your startup yet, which means that this episode will come at a perfect time. If you're listening to this and you already have co-founders on board or advisors on board and you haven't done what I'm about to say, then please, right after this is over, consider taking some of the action I'm going to give you. Okay. So today's question comes from Mike in Wichita Falls, and it's, "Hey Jake, I have a couple early stage advisors who I'm thinking about bringing on. I'm unsure about how to structure any sort of equity or payment structure for them. They seem to both want a substantial amount of equity. I'm just not sure how much to give away. And I want to make sure that I have enough room left over for investors. And I also don't want to make sure that the investors don't look at the equity I've already given away and think that I've given away too much." Equity is one of those things that feels fairly easy to give away in the beginning, but one of the problems is that it could really bite you if you don't do it the right way. What I want to talk about today, though, is really around the structure of those agreements, when you should have those kinds of conversations about the agreements, and then also I want to talk about how those agreements should be structured differently if you're talking about someone like a co-founder or someone who's going to be more of an advisor. And the reason I want to talk about this, too, is that I see sometimes this blurred line, like this gray area between whether someone's going to be a co-founder or whether someone should be more considered like an advisor. So let me give you an example of what I mean by that. So let's say you're an early stage startup, just starting out. You haven't quit your job full time yet, and you're starting to bring people on board to help you out. Let's just say that it's a developer. Okay, you're working full time. They're working full time. They agree to come in and help you out, maybe build some components into your MVP or build the entire MVP, whatever it ends up being. In a situation like that, you really need to sit down and have a conversation on how bought in that person is. Let's pretend that they ended up building it, you raised capital, and it was time to like both of you quit your jobs and start working on the startup full time. Are they actually going to do that? And not just are they going to do it, but you need to put it in writing that they will do that. Because if they're not willing to do that, they're not a co-founder. They're more of an advisor than anything else. Now, I know advisor is not a perfect term for that kind of position, but when you're talking about how agreements typically get structured, they would theoretically be more on the advisor side than on the co-founder side. Co-founders should be people who are running the company with you. That's why it's co-founder, not part-time co-founder until the startup raises capital and then it's time to work full-time and then they decide not to work full-time. That's a bad look, because if that person ends up having that co-founder title now, they end up not coming on full-time when you raise capital and the investors know that that's what's going to happen, because you obviously want to be honest about that. That's not going to be a good look for you, not just for your first investors, but for investors who want to come on board later. They're going to see this person on your cap table. Who is that person? Oh, they're a co-founder. That's not going to look very good, okay? And so if they're the kind of person who is helping you out in terms of working somewhere between 10, 15 hours a month or something like that, where, you know, and that's probably equivalent to about how much you're working too. I know most founders, and I know most of you are working way more than that, either at nights or on the weekends, trying to get your startup off the ground outside of your full-time job. And that's great. If that other person that you're thinking about bringing on is not the kind of person who, after having conversations, has agreed to come on full-time when certain milestones are hit, then they are not considered a co-founder. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You can still work with them and they can still work with you. You can still reward them with equity, but it wouldn't be anywhere near what a typical co-founder would get in terms of equity. Because when you're looking at your cap table, which is essentially the simplest way I can think about this, is who or what entities own equity in your company. When you're looking at it, a typical startup is started with about 10 million shares. Okay, that's pretty standard for an early stage startup. When you incorporate, you choose how many shares you want your company to have as a C corp, and that's usually recommended. And I talk about that in other episodes as well, why a C Corp is the recommended route for startups who want to go out and raise capital. You typically start off with 10 million shares, 20 million you do not issue, and the other 8 million, you, if you're a solo founder, you typically issue to yourself at the time of, you know, incorporation. And then what happens is you start bringing on people to your team. And if you already have a co-founder on your team, then at the time of incorporation, that's usually when you say, okay, well, we're still going to leave the 2 million alone unissued, the 2 million shares unissued. So about 20% of the shares unissued. We're going to issue the other 8 million and I'm going to get, let's say, 4 million and my co-founder is going to get 4 million. I typically don't recommend that you make it equivalent in terms of how many shares you own, but there's a lot of, you know, debate about that in the startup circles. But let's just make the math easy and say, I have a co-founder. We are both going to come on and work full-time in this company when the time comes. We have both made that commitment. We've put it in writing. We've maybe even put it in the operating agreement that we've had together. And so I know that this person's a co-founder. Like, they are ride or die. Like, they're going to stick with me until the end. That's great. But let's pretend that when you started the company and you incorporated, you issued 8 million shares to yourself and you left 2 million shares alone, just unissued shares, which some people will refer to like kind of as an option pool. And that usually that 2 million shares that is left unissued, that option pool, what that is used for is to grant equity to early stage advisors, early employees, because then what it does is it makes kind of the paperwork part of the process a little bit easier, because you're not taking equity away from yourself or ownership away from yourself and transferring it to them. You're instead just taking it out of the unissued shares that are just sitting there waiting for you to issue them to someone at some point. Now, just because they're sitting there unissued doesn't mean that you don't own them. They are owned by you. It's just they're not issued to you at this time. Okay. So with a real co-founder, someone who has agreed to make that commitment in writing, and I am emphasizing the in writing parts. This is the part that a lot of startups do not get right. In writing, they have committed to the same level of commitment that you have, then great. They have a co-founder interest and a co-founder stake in the company, which means equity that's equivalent to whatever contribution that they're making. If the person is not willing to do that, then they are more along the lines of what would be considered an advisor. And the advisor agreement that we typically like our founders to use at LaunchPeer is called the FAST agreement. You can just Google search FAST agreement. It was created by Founder Institute, I think like 7 years ago, 8 years ago or something like that. And it was just a really simple like 2-page agreement that just outlines very clearly what the expectations are of the person who's doing the advising to the startup. And it has very specific terminology in terms of hours that are required per month, the activities that are required of the person to do. And it's very black and white. And for any agreement that you have, co-founder agreements, agreements with advisors, even agreements with contractors or someone that you bring on, you want to make sure, especially when it comes to issuing equity or shares, that it is very black and white. There are no question marks about whether you did this or whether you did not do this. So I'll give you an example. Let's say we talk about that situation I was bringing up before, where you have someone who you sit down and have a conversation with, and you should have this conversation as early as possible. As soon as you guys decide you want to start working together, you should sit down and start writing out in very black and white terms what the person is expecting in terms of the relationship, what are you expecting in terms of the relationship, and making sure, is this the kind of person who will sign an agreement and say that when the startup reaches a certain milestone that they're going to come and work at the company full time? And if they don't, there's going to be consequences in terms of how much vesting that they get, which means how many shares that they get issued at the time of them making that decision. Or is this the kind of person, when we have these conversations, they say, you know what, after having this conversation, I don't think I'd be ready to quit my job and work with your startup full time, but I do want to contribute and I do want to help. I just don't think I'd be able to come on and work with your startup full time. That's okay. If that's the case, then a FAST agreement is perfect, because basically what it has already written out for you is essentially tiers of like contribution tiers and what that would mean in terms of how much equity that they get, and also how they earn that equity over time, which is what vesting is. Vesting essentially means that the person agrees to make a contribution over a specific period of time. Let's just pretend that it's 2 years. Okay, they have a 2-year vesting schedule. Well, what that means is over those 2 years, every quarter or every, you know, usually quarters is pretty normal. Sometimes it's every year, but typically every quarter when you're talking about advisors, every quarter or every month, what you do is they earn a portion of the equity that you granted them. So let's just pretend that a two-year cycle, it's two-year vesting schedule, and you're going to be issuing them, let's make the math easy and say, you know, over a two-year period, there's eight quarters, obviously, right, within a two-year period. And let's pretend that you're giving them 2%, okay? Well, that means every quarter, they're as they do the things that are very clearly written out in black and white that they say that they're going to be doing, you are now actually issuing them a portion, 1/8 of the 2% that they said that they would have. So if they do all of the stuff that they're supposed to do over the 2 years, by the end of the 2 years, they would have fully vested in the equity that you said you would give them, which is that 2%, and they have earned it over time. Because what you don't want to have happen, and I've seen this happen a lot, is it's not written black and white in terms of what they're supposed to do. You end up granting them this equity or these shares of the company, and you do it right away. And then they work for you for a couple weeks or a couple months, and then they just kind of fall off the map. They either stop doing the work, or they're harder to get a hold of, or they're not living up to the expectations that you had clearly written in black and white. If you didn't have a vesting schedule, there's nothing you can do about it. They would just, that the equity is theirs. They really have no incentive to keep doing the work. You already granted them the shares. You already granted them the ownership. Now you can try to take them to court and stuff, but it's going to be very difficult to win that argument because you never put anything on paper saying that they had to commit to this for a two-year period and that they would earn the equity as they went over the two-year period. And that's why I really like the fast agreement for situations where, hey, I'm bringing on a part-time developer. You know, I'm not really considering him a co-founder, but I don't have the money to pay him. And so I'm bringing him on more as an advisor, but an advisor who's actually going to be doing work. And that's okay. A lot of people think the term advisor just means somebody who gives advice. And that is, you know, theoretically true, but it can also be somebody who actually does work for you, whether it's design, whether it's development, whether it's, you know, marketing, whether it's connecting you with different businesses or lead generation, it could be anything. And that agreement, that fast agreement, is outlined in a very, very clear cut black and white way that makes sure that you're doing it the right way. With co-founders, it's obviously not a, you know, an advisor type situation. It is an actual like co-founder agreement, okay, which is like a whole other topic that I won't get into today. But for this situation here, when you're talking about people who are coming in and kind of providing assistance and co-founders, what I can't stress this enough. And I've seen this mistake happen over and over and over and over again. You cannot really trust anyone. And it's not because people are inherently trustworthy, it's that life just happens. One of you and your co-founder, you guys trust each other immensely. Like you've known each other for a long time, whatever. What if something happens? What if they get hit by a bus and are laid up in the hospital for, you know, months at a time, right? What if they have a lifestyle change? Like they end up having a kid or multiple kids, or something happens to their spouse or whatever, and they just have to step away and not work at the company anymore. Well, if you have nothing written in there to protect yourself, or what if the same thing happens to you and then they have nothing to do about it either? You both need to have stuff that protects you. And that's what having these conversations as early as possible are meant to do. It's not meant to be uncomfortable. It's just business. And you need to make sure that you're treating your startup as a business, not just, yeah, man, come in and help me out. We'll kind of figure stuff out later. That's not the right way to approach it. You really, really need to approach it in a way that's going to protect you and the company long term. Because if the investors don't feel like you are protecting the company at this stage, they're going to have a very hard time convincing themselves that you're going to be able to protect the company once you receive their money. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Launch Chat Podcast. If you have your own question you want to get answered on the show, just visit launchchat.com and send us your question either anonymously or let us know who you are so we can shout you out on the show. Also, leave us a rating or review on whatever podcast host you listen to us on. It definitely helps us spread the word about the podcast, and we'll see you guys on the next episode.